Hello everyone.
We are back with another podcast, which is a book review. This week, we are reviewing Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leith Babin. This book is basically about how to lead and win. This is a story of a US Navy SEAL who was posted in Iraq during one of the worst times in human history to basically neutralize the position that America had in Iraq. So in this book, he has explained a lot about how these battles can prove to have important things that we can learn from this bad times. Basically, that is what is shown in the book. So in this book, he draws a lot of parallels with even business and how to apply his leadership skills to the existing business, and how he has already done that and already achieved a few results. So right now we are actually in a pandemic, and there's a lot of negative things that are going around. So me reading this book, I think I've read this book a few months ago, I can draw a lot of conclusions. I can understand a lot of things from what he said and what he spoke about isolation and how it is important and all of that. So getting on into the book, so firstly he has mentioned a lot about winning the battle within. So winning the battle within means that how you talk to yourself, what is your inner talk, and how do you make yourself win? How do you motivate, let's say, 20 others to come on your journey and try to make them a better human than what they were and ultimately achieve the goal that was set? So what do you think about what you have, like, what is the highlights that you have taken from the book?
First of all, man, Jocko Willink is a hell of a man.
Yeah.
Okay, and the other thing what he narrates in the story is you should believe in the idea and you should believe in the whatever your mission you are having. So much so that the lowest rank of the soldier, what he has been implemented on the battalion or the group, should understand it clearly. And he should believe in that idea and in the mission the same way as the leader or the, you know, commander-in-chief does. Yeah. So even the idea, and I would say even the, you know, execution part of the process. Even the part of the process and even the target of the mission. Okay, so he talks about the war in Ramadi, which was in Iraq. And at that time, it was heavily influenced by the ISIS and Taliban intruders. But by the time the US Army was posted in Iraq, I think basically what they say or narrate in this book is how they got over the Iraqis and the ISIS and how they fought with them.
The terrorist Iraqis,
yeah. Along with the Iraqi soldiers, what were posted over there. So I think first of all, you should have a confirm and straightforward belief in what you are trying to achieve. I mean, if you are not clear with the goal, you aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And you should convey the same message, and you should convey the same enthusiasm, I would say, and convey the same, the basic and the core concept and the core idea of what you have to achieve and what you believe in to other subordinates and other peers.
Yeah. So basically the idea, the book starts with what, the incident that happened.
Hmm.
So there was a few misunderstandings because of which there was a blue on blue fire. So blue on blue fire is basically...
Blue on blue fire basically means a friendly fire. Your own troops attacking on the other, the other part or the other unit of your troop.
And whenever there is a war, not only one troop is there. There are a lot of departments
battalions
of the same who have the same goal, who are on the same side. But a lot of times there is a lot of miscommunication about positioning and what actions they are taking.
Right.
So there was a problem and there was a friendly casualty.
Yeah. The unit who Jocko was assigned with was task group cruiser.
Yeah.
And the Navy SEALs were in a building, and the other Marines and the snipers were on the other side. And basically, because of the miscommunication, they fired on within the house themselves. And yeah, I think one casualty and one death.
What? Casualty and death is the same?
No. Casualty, I mean
casualty,
injury.
Injury,
yeah,
and a casualty.
Yeah.
So what happened? So after that, he immediately got an email from the higher command,
commander in chief,
and a couple of higher ranking
officers, basically.
Yeah. So they said that the email basically said that stop all operations, and we are inbound, and create an incident report of exactly what happened.
Mm.
So when he was writing the incident report, he was looking at whom to blame. Whom to blame being, whose mistake was it?
Who was responsible for the miscommunication?
Yes. So, for that moment, he started writing the incident down. He started writing the bearing when it happened, where the miscommunication happened, all of that. So, once he got through half of it, he started having a tug of war in his head. Something was pulling back from telling him that it was somebody else's mistake.
Mm.
So after work, he knew the answer, and it was basically in the book. He says it very well. He says that anything that happens on the battlefield is the responsibility of the leader, because leader is the person that makes decisions, and it is his responsibility. So when the commander in chief arrived at the camp, he explained to them that this is what had happened, and these are the following steps I'm going to take so that this does not happen again, and this is how we are going to fix it. So when he was honest, he took basically the ownership, that is extreme ownership about it, because there was a lot of ways in which he could have pushed the responsibility on somebody else. It was very easy for him to do, because he was the commander and he could have easily done that.
Yes.
And by taking ownership, he also put his career in jeopardy, because usually after a friendly fire, there is a firing, and usually it is the leader that is fired.
Mm.
So after him being honest, everybody started taking responsibility of their own, even in the meeting itself.
Mm.
Nobody wanted Joko only to take the blame. They wanted to tell Joko that, yeah, it is not just your mistake, it is ours, and we can battle this together.
Getting into the scenario, when Joko enters the camp and he asks whose responsibility or who was responsible for the miscommunication, his fellow soldiers stand up.
Yeah.
And I think two or three of them stand up simultaneously, and they say, like, it was my communication on the other end.
Yeah.
And the other one says, like, no, I was assigned to cover the Afghan soldiers and I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And Joko says, no, you weren't at fault. I was the one who was obvious to my duty, but I didn't do it, basically. And Joko says, no, it wasn't your fault at all. Then at the end he says, you know whose fault it is? It is my fault. And, like, taking ownership at that extent somewhat feels a bit, you would say, yeah, it is just extreme at end. Because a leader, we don't see leaders taking responsibility for something that is so, you know, that is, I would say their career is at stake.
Yeah, over
here. He can easily get demoted or he can easily get fired.
And it is very difficult when you think about the position he was in.
Yeah.
So I have heard a lot of stories about Joko, and even from the, on the podcasts, I've heard...
Incredible. So, even in that, he explains how whatever he used to ask from the platoon commander,
let's say he wanted new armory, nobody second guessed him or nobody questioned why you want it. They just got it, because he only asked when it was extremely needed.
Yeah.
And I think it is a great lesson to be learned. So, there are a lot of leadership qualities that he talks about, and also a lot of concepts in which he explains situation by situation how he fixed it, how he got into the situation and how he fixed it. So for example, he talks about the Afghani soldiers, they were incompetent because they did not go through the rigorous process that American SEALs went through. So he had a lot of problems dealing with that, because his ego used to come in between, because he worked his ass off for like 15 years to get to where he was, and these guys just get it. They just take a gun and run. So he did not think it was right, but he had to work with them because they were a crucial part of the operation. So he had to teach them how to take responsibility, because he wanted to trust them. Because even in the book, he explains that even after we are gone, we being the American troops are gone, the Afghani troops have to take over. They have to be responsible. They have to make sure that these terrorists don't harm the normal civilians.
Yeah.
So this was a really eye-opening story for me, at least, because whenever I think about competent groups or competent leaders, I always think that they have great subordinates under him.
Right.
So listening to Jocko explain exactly how he came over this problem that he had was amazing.
You know what, I think if suppose it is different for our and his, I mean, say scenario, suppose you have a team of yours, okay, any like financial or business team, and you don't take a few certain like members, I would say, or some friends of yours who are very close to you, but eventually they aren't like
good enough
for the team, okay?
Yeah.
But taking or not taking them into the team, implementing the basic regulations, rules and regulations, what you have in the team, it is different for the corporates or like businessmen people. But for the soldiers, suppose like if you take on to the battle with the ISIS or the Talibanis with an incompetent group by your side, and if they misfire or if something happens that doesn't add up to the process, but on the worst side, it harms you.
Yeah.
It harms your own troops. That is such a risk to take.
Yeah.
In the corporate world or in the business world, okay, if someone doesn't, I would say work up to his point, it is okay. He doesn't do any negative on your side.
And he doesn't basically kill anybody.
Kill anybody.
He might make you lose money,
but he won't kill anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the stakes are high.
Stakes
when
are very high.
When
this is like a win or lose game.
Yeah, win or die.
Win or die, I would say. Yeah.
So this I have been experiencing a little bit in the recent past.
Hmm.
So even in a group that I was.
Okay.
So there were a couple of people that I knew that they were good enough, but I did not know that they were to the standard, because I tried to keep my standard of work very high.
Hmm.
So that I can create products that are immensely great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can create something that is great with mediocre or people who are not as motivated as you are.
Yeah, mediocre mindset people.
Yeah. Okay. So I started working with them. Then once I started working with them, initially I got very frustrated about how less motivated you are because I was working like 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day. I did not sleep at all. Three days I did not sleep.
Okay.
Because I was driven. I did not want anything other than doing this. So I started working then.
What is the scenario with them, with your friends?
So
how are they coping up with it?
No, basically they did not take ownership, that's all.
Okay.
They did not care if the project was great or not great.
Okay.
They just were there because they were told to be there, that's all. So I started reading this book, I started learning from this book, I started understanding that there are no bad teams, there are just bad leaders.
Right.
Then I started coping, then I started understanding these people, how these people are, what is their strengths, what is their weaknesses.
Okay.
Then I started working with their strengths. I started creating, I started molding the project in a way that it was good for all the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing, so it was a huge learning curve for me.
Okay.
Because when you are thinking about being a leader, it means that you have confidence not only in yourself, you have confidence in the people around you also.
Right.
Because the success of your project depends on them also.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's one great thing that has happened without a great team.
Yeah.
And every great team has a great leader.
Correct.
So it was a huge learning curve for me.
Mm.
But I think I've learned a lot from because of this book. I got through these difficult to lead times.
Okay.
And I started learning.
Hmm.
So a few things that stood out for me were how I manage those people.
Okay.
So I think people have to be managed personally.
Hmm.
On a personal level, you have to understand people.
Okay.
And if you don't want to understand other people, then there's no point in having them in your group.
Hmm.
If they don't share your goal,
your vision,
right. There's no point in them existing in your group.
Right.
So it's better to fire them than trying to work with
Cope up with them, yeah, absolutely.
So even if you're under somebody else, if I was under some teacher and working under some teacher, if I felt that I did not share a goal with her, then there's no point in wasting so much time, right?
Right.
So I think that is what I learned.
I feel it, but suppose for example, okay, like you have a team who isn't working up to your standard, then how do you convey him into working up to your standard?
So what I try to do is firstly understand that why is he lacking behind?
Hmm.
So in the book, they have explained it very well that every person, so from the commander-in-chief to the
lowest ranking officer.
Lowest ranking officer.
Soldier, yeah.
Should have the idea what the goal is of the action.
Crystal clear in his mind.
Yeah. Mm. And what, how he is contributing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is asking him to lead.
Right.
If a sniper, right. Nobody is asking a sniper to go ahead and bust down some doors.
Yeah, yeah.
He has to do what he likes as much
designated as teams or designated task.
Yeah.
Right.
So what I try to do is I try to focus on how what is the strengths that the people have, how I can mold my project in a way that it helps their strengths. Okay, so that is the first thing I see. Secondly, what I try to do is how, what are the common factors that we believe in.
Right.
So is there a mentality that we both subscribe to?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the second thing. Thirdly, if none of these work, so there are a few more points, but if none of them work,
okay,
then I think that the best way is to just eliminate them.
Hmm.
Because if nothing is parallel, if you're not having any connection with the other person,
hmm,
then you cannot have them on your team.
It goes on with the preach. I mean, it goes on with the quote what Jocko says. It is not what you preach, it is what you tolerate.
Yeah.
Basically, Jocko is like, after retiring from the Navy SEALs, he coaches or he even acts like a mentor for the, you know, corporates and the business-minded people. And I think Jocko, I have seen, it is fascinating, you know, to see ex-military men or say the people who have, I would say, retired from Army or Navy getting into jobs that we know are very, I would say, prestigious to us now. I would say Captain Raghuraman, have you heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there is another guy on YouTube who is a very famous YouTuber, and he had, like, recently he had shot a, I would say, kind of a podcast thing with the basketball player.
Which basketball player?
Sure.
Michael Jordan.
No, not Michael Jordan.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
okay.
With Kobe Bryant. Yeah, and I think his channel's name is Value Entertainment. Okay, and he was an Iraqi soldier.
What?
Value Entertainment.
Value Entertainment.
Yeah, he's basically from Iraq. Originally from Iraq. We will like link him in the description. But yeah, he was a basically Iraqi soldier who fights for US now. Okay, and like we have so many examples of people who have been from a military background or ex-military, but they share their values and they share their ideas so well that they have done very good from the post-military life as well. It is very fascinating for me.
I think it is because in the book they have mentioned that Jocko has said that everything is amplified.
Yeah.
So the rewards are amplified.
Hmm.
The risks are amplified.
I wonder if it is because of the discipline what they teach you
in
the army.
No, it is because of the worst times that they go. So
like they become grateful for what they have right now, like what do you mean?
No, so obviously they become grateful for what, how safe they are when they come back. But I think it is very like amplified.
Okay.
Like the highs are very high, the lows are very low. So the lowest low is death.
Mm-hmm.
So the highest high is killing and taking over a huge apartment and returning home to your family.
Yeah.
And that's
like accomplishing your mission, what you're asking to. Okay.
And it does not have to be, so the highs and lows are not like 3 months long. They're every day.
Yeah.
One day you feel better, the next day you feel down.
Grumpy.
So how do you manage that? How do you do that? So basically what we feel every day is basically amplified on a war zone is what was explained in the book. And I thought it was
amazing.
That was a core message that he sent, that whenever you think that you're going through shit, you don't know what shit is. There are a lot of people that are going through worse.
Same.
And whenever you think about it, you feel very grateful. So I think that even in the book, whenever they explain that how a leader should be, so I think he explains about who was that the guy in the movie Sniper,
American Sniper, Chris Kyle.
Yeah, I think he's also mentioned.
He was also the part of the
battalion. Yeah, and Jocko has no bad friends or no people he has grudges over. I've seen, and that is amazing. So they formed kind of a brotherhood.
That is the best part of the army and military. What I think. So yeah, I am a very huge sucker for military films and like army movies. And the best part what I think about soldiers is like they create a few bonds which are very, I would say, like pure and genuine. Like the other thing what we teach. And even like we all as basically like a few like normal people, civilians, we just, you know, glorify our brotherhood and the bonds what they form. Even like how we glorify the football teams and how best friends they are. Even the players.
Yeah.
Like for example, what I was talking to you the other day, the which player he is. I believe he is a Arsenal player, something. The two players of the football team who I was talking to you the other day. They have been, like, they are in a different team right now, but they used to play for, I believe...
Dortmund.
Dortmund.
Yeah, Lewandowski and Reus.
Right.
Yeah.
You know how we glorify these people? Like, yeah. Basically for their friendship. The same goes with the army soldiers.
I think but bonds are formed here.
Yeah. But I think they can die for each other, and that's what makes them, like, trust each other so well. And yeah. Even after the war and after everything, they are so well connected.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it is because they go through a lot of things.
Yeah.
And when you're going through hardship, you care about people more because you don't know tomorrow you'll live or die. And whenever you are going through things and whenever you decide that you trust somebody, you cannot just take it back once the job is finished. So I think that is massive. And in jobs like in militaries or in platoons and all of that, you have to trust each other. You have to give it everything you have.
There is no other.
Yeah, because you a single person cannot beat a whole, terrorist group.
There is one another, the same saying which goes like this, okay? It is by Captain Raghuraman, who was a decorated officer in the Indian Army. He says there is no place for individual gladiators in a really good team.
Yeah.
There can't be one guy who finishes off all the goals and who's like the, you know, who shares the tiger share, lion's share, I mean, and he just gets all the credits in a really good team.
Yeah.
If you have a really good team, everyone contributes the same.
Yeah, and that is what I think. It is very important to understand that you can be a perfectionist at only one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a great thing, a great worker. You can be great at one thing.
Yeah.
Because your brain does not understand two things.
No.
And anything other than that one thing is a distraction for you.
Yeah, right.
So you have to make sure that you are around people who are great in their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do that when I'm working with people.
Yeah, you can be like multitasker, but you have to choose what you are great. I mean, there is one thing for everyone who really believe in certain thing. For example, if you take Roger Federer, he's really good at tennis. Doesn't mean he's bad at something else or he's bad at some other sport, but tennis works for him the best way.
Yeah, and that is what he likes, and that is what he would do if there was nothing else.
Yeah,
that is what he would do.
He would do.
And I think I really like that mentality of exactly doing what you like and making sure that you get a living out of it.
Single tasking.
And a lot of people, I honestly fear always that maybe by following your dreams you don't get the money, the desired things, what you want. But I have started, like, after reading these books, I've started realizing that maybe I don't need everybody else wants. I need just one thing.
Okay.
And once I get that, I might be happy.
Yeah,
I might be motivated to do more.
Mm.
So rather than thinking in the perspective of making X amount of money, obviously money making is not a problem, but X amount of money, I started thinking on what are the techniques I can perfect to do all of this. So even
I believe what values I can provide to the world.
Yeah. So I think it is providing values is a two-edged sword, because when you are providing value, you are thinking about other people.
Yeah.
So and if your goal is dependent on other people, I don't think it is. I don't think it is good enough.
Okay.
So because somebody else is in control of your life is what I feel.
No, you don't need somebody else to validate you.
Yeah.
But like if you provide something for a society, I mean, it can be anything. It can be some form of like help or some NGO. You start an NGO, anything can be like in form of anything. But I think you don't need to make it a valid, like you don't have to get, you know, validity from someone else. You don't have to get acceptance from some people.
Yeah, absolutely.
For something you are very...
No, but I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
If you are an architect, you want to build a house. You will have to build a house that is convenient for the people who are going to live in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is what I'm saying. So what I try to do is, I try to like take that in account and then work in a way that is very appealing to me, which is very creative to me.
Okay.
The end product should be very pleasing to me, firstly. It might or might not be very pleasing to others, but it has to be pleasing to me. I think when you internalize this concept of doing, and when I do that, I try to do that a lot.
Okay.
I try to internalize the concept of being mindful about what I want.
Achha.
And I think that is bringing me happiness a little bit, at least.
Yeah.
So even this book, even here he has mentioned about the winning the inner battle, this is what he says, right? You nobody can beat you unless you beat yourself, is what he says. And I think it is brilliant. You can honestly believe that nobody else can beat you. That is such a thing, such a great thing anybody can say to somebody to motivate them, right? So there are a lot of other things also which are mentioned in the book, like, so I would really like to know your thoughts about what you think about the difference between the last book review we did and this book review we did. So in the last book review we spoke about Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, and this book is Extreme Ownership. So there are very different approaches to this, to a similar things. So for example, Goggins is a person who stays alone. He does not like brotherhood. He does not like anything like that. He wants to be the, he says, uncommon amongst uncommon. He wants to be that. He wants to be
there
a warrior.
There are people, you know, who aren't like good socially, or it's like how Rock says, I respect you for what you are, but you can't have a go with me.
That's what, no, no, what I'm trying to ask is, what do you think, what difference do you think it makes to you when you understand that there are two ways to it? So,
for example, like in the basic sense, first of all, what I think is, David Goggins hasn't been recruited or assigned to a certain mission with his teammates or with his platoon and into a war, which is not even close to how hard it is in Somali. Right? He was always a Navy SEAL. He has obviously like criteria what is required for a Navy SEAL officer. He has already completed his bad water training and bad loop training, but even after all of it, I don't think he can, like, I don't think basically that he has, how he says in the book, right, that he doesn't socialize with people and some of his teammates don't like him.
Yeah.
And most of them just respect him, but some of them just hate him.
Yeah.
And so I think if you go into a war with a team that you hate, eventually you respect each other, eventually you build that bond. No matter how bad that team is, or no matter how the things might seem, they're falling off in the initial phases, and eventually when you start to, like, what you can say, start to respect and appreciate there are other teammates around you who will save you when you are in the war and who will help you to achieve whatever vision or whatever target you have. I think it just builds onto a mutual respect later, eventually.
Yeah, I think there are, I honestly think there are two ways to it.
Okay.
So, firstly, there's a way that Goggins does it, right? So, what Goggins does is be alone and work on himself constantly.
Yeah.
Like, he has a lot of demons of his own.
Mm.
And he tries to work on that. He tries to improve himself. And that is his personality. Like,
I wonder how it will turn out in the long run. You know, there are some people, okay? There are some very driven people who I have also seen in my life. There is one of ambassadors. I won't take his name, but yeah. He is like very antisocial. And he's very reluctant and very, very, I would say, dedicated to whatever he does. Okay, but he isn't at all like enjoying what a normal, random, I would say, like college guy does. Like, socializing is the basic and the, I would say, do you think it is worth it? In the end, if suppose David Goggins wasn't David Goggins ever, I mean, in terms of like whatever he has achieved now and how he lived his life as a janitor in the beginning, what do you think? It would be worth it to not socialize at all?
Yeah, I think you should follow your personality. I think you should never I never undermine my personality over anything else. So I know a few things about me that I feel that are very important to me. So for example, being honest is extremely important to me. So a few people can get away with not being honest,
right?
So, and it won't matter to them, but it does matter to me. So I think that is part of my personality. I don't socialize a lot, and yeah, of course I like to talk a lot. I like to socialize with the people I like a lot,
right?
But I don't like to go out and socialize completely. It is not a part of my personality, and I don't like it. So I prioritize that over my, yeah. So everything comes with a price. So you have to give up something to achieve that. And once you get some reward, right? So for example, let's take socializing. Socializing gives, for example, when I talk to people that I like, that gives me a dopamine hit. That makes me happy. That makes me believe in what I honestly believe in. It puts fuel on my fire, and I really like it. But it comes at the cost of time. So time that I could have possibly put into my own business, I could have taken it to the next level. So this is a trade-off that you always face. Not just this, but these are the kinds of trade-offs you always face. So you have to. So I try to make the best out of both. I try to let's say whenever I'm feeling low, I try to go out and socialize with the people that I like, so that I get the motivation to work harder the next hour. So I think there's a balance between both of them. I don't think one is right and one is wrong.
Yeah.
But I think these two books show us that there is not one way to the top.
Even Jocko doesn't feel like he's a very, you know, outspoken or...
Yeah, but he does believe in brotherhood.
Really, absolutely.
He has incredible friends.
And I think that really contributes to the fact that Jocko Willink has been on the field with his teammates into a war.
Yeah.
And however rude it may sound, but David Goggins has never been into a war to be in that situation.
No, if that was his goal, if Goggins' goal was to be in the war, then definitely he would buy in the war because he has the mental fortitude to do it.
He would have won so many medals, bro. Really.
But that is what, see, this is, I think this is the basic difference between people who have goals.
Mm.
So you cannot differentiate. So is Jocko better than Goggins?
There is no competition.
Exactly.
There isn't a standard to like compare them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is what I'm trying to say.
Hmm.
You cannot. There are two different personalities. These are two different personalities.
Hmm.
So you don't have the right, or you should not.
Compare.
At least I do not compare them anytime.
Hmm.
Because it is, you don't know what people have gone through, firstly. And secondly, these goals are not. You don't come up with these goals.
Ours to justify. They are theirs.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You don't come up with these goals. These goals are given to you.
Oh, okay.
Do you?
I get it.
Yeah.
It
comes to you naturally. Why do you like ice cream? There's a reason. No, it just comes to you naturally. Why do I play tennis? Why do you like military?
Mm-hmm.
You have not, like, I don't think you have been forced to watch military videos and then you have liked it.
Yeah.
You like it because you like it. There's no other reason.
Mm-hmm.
So these are differences between two humans.
Mm.
And you can never say that, yeah, he likes military more, he likes military less.
Yeah.
You like it as much as you want, and there are different people. So when you think of everything in this way, there's no comparison that you can draw.
Absolutely.
So I think this is a massive thing that I've learned from reading these two books.
Hmm.
That there's not a single thing, because I can relate to this also, Jocko, very well.
Yeah.
Because I like to be a leader, I think that I can lead a lot of people because I have that mental fortitude to go to the next level. But I also believe in working on yourself day and night, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions.
Jocko does, I've seen, like, if you anyway, like, if you have an Instagram account or something, just go and check Jocko Willink. He, obviously, you have told me about this first of all, and then I checked him out. He posts every day a photo of his watch at 4:30 p.m. In the morning. He wakes up at 4:30, and that is like a wake up call to him that I own the day, and from here whatever I do, I own it.
Yeah. So this is I think that is the way he shows how honest he is, and it becomes a contract for him, I think. That once he starts doing it,
he gets obliged to what he does.
Obliged, and you have to focus on doing it right. So I think Thomas Frank, if you know, so he used to do a thing that said that if he does not wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 a.m., he does not turn off the alarm at 6 a.m. in the morning and delete one tweet, then he'll be donating $5 to charity. So rather than losing that $5 and being ashamed on Twitter, he rather would wake up early and start doing it. So I think it is a very interesting
thing. And also, if you watch Jocko on his podcast, Jocko has a letter on his wall written, a quote on his wall written as discipline equals freedom.
Yeah, and I honestly believe that. So I was a person who hated discipline.
Okay.
I hated everything that was related to discipline because it was taught to me so badly by school.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically what I understood was, what I thought was, to be creative, you have to be free. You cannot just have a framework and be creative.
Okay.
You have to be free. You have to do whatever you want. You have to have a messy room. You have to have all of that. All of the hippie things that you want.
Okay.
But the more that I did, the more uncomfortable I got in my head. I did not know where to start. I did not have any framework.
It is
to
a subconscious
be...
cue.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. And I started losing the battles that I used to win. And it started getting to me. And I started thinking, how can I improve this? So now what I try to do is I try to separate my work from my everyday thing. I come to a different place to work. Okay. I study at different place. Mm. I sleep at different place. So it gives me a social, I think a mental cue.
Yeah.
Mental cue of how to, like, how I differentiate all of these.
Mm.
And yeah, I think that is how I have become more disciplined. And that is why I have become more free to do what I actually like. And I think Jocko and even Late Babin has...
Do you think... Okay, let me just interrupt you to ask a question. Do you think you, if you have a discipline, you should have a goal, first of all, to get to what you want? I mean, suppose if you don't have a goal to gain weight or gain, put up mass to a certain extent and to a certain weight, I would say. Or like just imagine going just training every day into the gym without any goal.
Yeah.
Do you think discipline remains until you for a longer time in a longer run if you don't have any goal?
Yeah, I think.
Suppose you go every day to the gym, okay? There is no week or weekend off or something like that. But you don't have a goal. You don't have a certain diet that you stick to every day.
Yeah.
How long do you think you will go to the gym every day and continue with that discipline if you don't have a really good goal?
Yeah, so I think so after you're telling me like 10,000 times I watched the Forrest Gump movie. So yeah. So in that movie, I think it is a really firstly good movie to watch, but I learned from that you don't need much to be successful in this competitive world that they call.
Uh-huh.
Firstly, secondly, I think yeah, if you don't have a goal and if you don't think about the goal, and you want to just, if you just go to the gym like every day, I think you don't need a goal at all if you have discipline. And
but it depends on, like, when you see in the movie, okay, Tom Hanks is playing a guy who is, I would say, not dumb, but he isn't basically that smart, okay, and he does something, few things that he's very, I would say, disciplined or he's very interesting. For example, he goes into the army, first of all, he gets recruited into the army, and whatever he thinks and whatever he does is related to army. Like even the gun, even the like assembling and dismantling the gun, everything what he does is related to army. And once he gets retired from the army, he once, like, obviously in the, if you have seen the movie, he wins I think 2 or 3 gallantry medals. And afterwards when he comes back, he starts fishing for crabs or shrimps. Okay, and whatever he does, he just does it with 100% dedication.
Yeah, I think that is the key here.
Yeah.
Working your ass off, giving it everything you have.
But that's what I'm saying. Okay, for example, if you like work for something, for example, let's take the gym thing, okay? If you think Tom Hanks in the movie worked his ass off training every day, but he doesn't know what to train for. I mean, obviously, it feels great to have a nice body,
but... I think,
but
yeah, you it is more of...
What you want?
Not what you want, but you focus, like, the motivation that comes for you might come from a goal that you have.
Okay.
But for a person who does not have a goal, so I know a lot of people who don't. So those people, they just want to be in the present, YOLO, as they say.
Okay.
They want to be in the present. That gives them happiness.
Mm.
Okay, that is why there's no long-term goal, nothing.
Mm.
But they're very happy in the moment. And if, let's say, I have a few friends that go to the gym, like every day.
Mm.
No goal whatsoever, but
nothing.
They do.
Okay.
That's all. That gives them pleasure, that them, and then they start putting photos of them and watch out.
Okay.
Is that a goal? Is that what you want to be? Let's say, tell me something about that. Is the bodybuilder guy the person? No. They feel happy going to the gym. That is all. That is all.
That's another perspective. I'm like talking about things that you want. Like, simply just example.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's what people go to the gym, right?
Hmm. Yeah. How, like, suppose, just imagine, if you don't have certain, I would say, one certain accomplishable goal, and if you just are working 24 hours for a job that you don't want or don't love.
No,
it,
that's what.
How
people,
long will you love it?
Nobody loves it.
That's what, yeah.
Nobody loves it.
Yeah.
But that's not, you, I think it is very important for, like, at least me to understand that not everybody is driven, and not everybody wants to be driven.
Yeah.
So, people who do shitty jobs, they deserve to be there, firstly.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, if they feel bad enough to leave that job, they will.
Yeah.
But they don't. Because they don't have the balls to get out, express themselves.
We are just talking in general. There might be somebody who has like financial conditions and...
No,
yeah,
even I think, I honestly feel that I started trying to build something from scratch without taking help of any of the privileges that I was provided.
Okay.
I honestly feel that once you start going, you start hitting the hammer on the head.
Mm.
Once you start working like 3 days a week, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, you start understanding that nobody can stop you. Money cannot stop you. Motivation cannot stop you. Nothing can stop you.
Mm.
Just given that you are disciplined and you are honest to what you do.
Okay.
So I think that it applies to everybody who wants to, let's say, be free.
Mm.
Discipline is what we have to understand. And as Joe Rogan says, that discipline helps him get work done.
Mm.
And people judge you on the work you have done.
Yeah.
So I think that is the way I
also
understand.
Perceive it in another way. Okay, suppose if you are doing something like, suppose a book project or something you are doing just for the fun in this, like, whatever this pandemic has done to us, if you have time and you are supposedly building your project or anything that you are building, that you are creating, if you are an assignment for completion in this quarantine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what Joko says in this book, is you write the letter of the subordinates, and for their passengers. Okay. The obviously, Joko has a very, I would say, ethical and very moral high living, and also experience in the warfare.
Yeah.
So he can just like point out the chart and point out the best possible plan for the mission. But if you let your troops, whatever the task had been assigned to them, I think that makes them more responsible. And I think that makes them more responsible and entitled to do what they have.
They can take ownership of them.
They can take ownership of
them. Yeah, and once you take ownership of them, of the project,
mm.
you are responsible firstly, and secondly,
yeah.
When the project is not going well, you feel that you are not working your hardest.
So
you give it everything you got because
agree.
You have taken the ownership and you are feeling that in your head.
Yeah.
So that is a great point that even Joko has made.
That is also the other thing, you know, the startups, how hard they work in the beginning,
yeah.
rather than the, you know, corporates who work for somebody else.
Yeah, of course. No.
There is a huge differentiation between the amount of enthusiasm what startup companies have in the initiative. I mean, obviously all startups have, like, you know, if they feel responsible, the enthusiasm obviously comes to them.
No, all successful startups are very
excited. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
all startups, because
I would say in the initiation phase, I mean in the starting
yeah.
phase, all startups are,
because they burn out
excited.
Very well,
yeah.
very fast.
That is like the leading factor. But I would say if you have something of your own, if you want something, that then you give them the most priority.
Yeah, right. And there is another school of thought to this.
Hmm.
One is that you, let's say like electronics, you build a company around it, you become rich, you
okay.
retire and you die.
Hmm.
So that is one school of thought. The other one is, you like electronics, you hate, let's say, accounts.
Okay,
you don't want anything to do about accounts.
Huh.
What you do is, you go to, let's say, Intel.
Okay.
You tell them how great you are. They hire you.
Huh.
You work for them for like 40 years. You retire, you die.
Hmm.
So this is the second school of thought, and I don't think either of them is wrong.
Yeah.
I think both of them are right, but as long as your passion is intact,
that is
you true. Have to be creative in, like, I want to be creative in the work I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want somebody to tell me that, yeah, you have to do this, you have to wear this, you have to do X, Y, Z. That is making machines, that is making robots.
Yeah.
And if you want robots, buy robots, don't buy humans. I honestly think that, and yeah, I think this is like taking ownership has
taking ownership also, I can relate in some few things, okay? And I don't mean to hate on anybody. Yesterday only I was telling you about like the morning run. Yesterday at night I think I played Call of Duty for like 2 hours, okay? So I'm not hating on gamers, but yeah, the other thing that is there in like how addicting it is for gamers, or how addicting it is for teenagers getting into games. I think the basic reason for it, I read this YouTube comment, I honestly think I don't have it in my phone right now. But yeah, I'll still how like synthesize the core concept of it. Yeah. So it says like gamers and the teenagers what we have today are like very addicted to gaming and these things, because gaming basically gives you a motto. It gives you a mission that you have to complete.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they provide with a certain, when you complete a task, or when you, for example, you have been playing GTA 5, I guess. No? GTA 5,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
GTA 4, like, okay, I haven't played the game, but I can relate to it. Or for example, me playing Call of Duty. When you complete a mission, you get a sense of heroism
yeah.
out of it. Okay, I was assigned this duty and I have done it the best way possible. And that heroism, what is what teenagers crave, and they don't get in their real life. what is the epitome of creativity and like the epitome of heroism that a teenager gets from his academic life? Like, what is the most epitome of, you know, creativity what your teacher has ever assigned to you?
Yeah.
For me, it was like my teacher assigning me to create and write an essay about Jhada Ji Atmakata.
Yeah.
That was the epitome. Like, there is nothing like meant or, you know, like you are bound to get into that creative side of your mind.
Yeah.
Or you are expressed, you are entitled to get that experience of heroism.
Yeah.
And video games provide you that. And that's why video games are so popular among teenagers.
Yeah, I know. I don't play a lot of games, but I see a lot of people addicted to games and I feel the same way that
yeah.
people crave being heroes at, of their own movies and this... platform lets them perform like they want and people can create, let's say, careers out of them. But I, from a pure engineer's point of view, I feel that I want to be the person who is hero in real life. So let's say there is a building on fire. I want to be the one who runs in and saves the kids.
Enough to go in there.
Plus physically and then mentally fit enough.
Yeah.
And then he understands how the fire works. He tries to analyze where the fire has come from and then he avoids that, and that is, I think, this is basically a service to the society. It's nothing for me, and I luckily have that in my head that I want to give back something.
That's like, you aren't a teenager. That
yeah,
is
yeah, yeah. I
even teenagers are by the way, he's 24, his birthday was like last week.
Yesterday.
So yeah, anyway, the other point what I think is, you are conditioned in your teenage years the most, and you are influenced by some, if you are influenced with good people and if you are influenced with good things in your life, you are good to go. But if you are influenced with bad things, for example, I will give you this, I read the stats somewhere, is you know, the chronic alcoholics what we have in our country, they have started using or abusing alcohol and cigarettes or beer, anything, the drug of their choice, in their teenage years. Yeah, the chronic alcoholics.
Yeah.
So basically, alcohol, like addicts and like alcoholics, they don't start. I mean, obviously, they can start at whatever point of life they are in. But you know, the chronic alcoholics, most of them have started abusing alcohol in their teenage years.
Yeah.
And that is what sticks to with them until they die.
Yeah.
Due to alcohol.
So there are a lot of concepts that we resonate, we both, me and Akash, resonate with this book. First thing is how to win the war within. Second is how important it is to be a leader in the times of crisis. How we have to take extreme ownership of the problems and the solutions to these problems. Because if you don't take ownership of the problem, then the problems don't get solved. The blame game, as they call it, starts.
Yeah.
So I honestly have learned a lot from reading this book, understanding this book, trying to implement my ideas to this book, trying to test the concepts that have been mentioned in this book. And I've really liked this book, and I really listened to Jocko's podcast too, and I think it is one of the best books that I have read. And it gives you an example of how mental fortitude
is built
and how it is maintained. And it is not just a war field that you have to do it in. It is like businesses.
In your everyday life.
Literally everyday life. And I've tried to also implement it. And yeah.
So, and you know what, when you take responsibility, like the core concept of what I have, I would say synthesis from the book is, if you take responsibility and if it is you who is on the blame, you don't waste your time blaming other people or circumstances.
Yeah, you try to fix the problem.
Yeah, you try to fix the problem, you try to improve yourself.
Yeah. So that was it, and hope you guys liked it, and we'll be back with another book review as soon as possible. So see you guys.
Stay home, stay safe.
Yes, thank you.